I got a reservation to come up here and go musky fishing.
Well, hello, little boy. Welcome to the Wisconsin Murder Cabin, eh?
All right, folks, welcome to the Musky 360 podcast. You might have put it together that me and the guru himself stayed at the Wisconsin Death Cabin. Did we not, guru?
Yeah, we did, man. It was spooky.
Extra spooky, boys. It's spooky. Somebody touched me.
Anyway, so me and Guru, I drove up to the North Woods, and me and Guru ran around, and man, we had a heck of a trip, dude. That was crazy. So we're not going to name names, but we stayed at possibly... like the most like ran down lodge of all times, dude. It was so freaking bad, dude. Freaking guru, I'm just gonna cut to the chase, bro. I bathed twice the entire time. I was there for a week and I took two showers because there was two hand towels at the lodge.
Yeah, it was just enough to cover like a foot.
I was toweling off with a hand towel. So, if you can imagine, me and the guru in essentially a wooden prison cell. That's about how big this thing was.
It was pretty ripe in there.
You could touch wall to wall with either hand. It was so bad.
And what was the name of our cabin?
We had the honeymoon suite, folks. There is a picture to prove it. So we had the honeymoon suite cabin. This cabin was built sometime in the 1840s and was used as a Civil War hospital, I think. So I put a pop can on the floor. Just to see, because I was getting the funhouse effect in there, and like anything you put on like the floor would roll to either side. It was like you would take a step in there and thought one leg was shorter than the other. So here we are. It is super hot the first day I get there. There's not a lick of air conditioning in this place. So we have one window. It is so hot. I've never been hotter in my life, dude.
It was hot, man.
It was hot. It was the only place we could find on short notice. It was something, I'll tell you. That place was something. So, like, the first night we're there, so I called the bed, which was a bad call, right? I should have taken the floor because the bed was, like, laying on top of 1,000 pop bottles. And anyway, we're laying there in bed. I'm dead asleep. And then something bigger than shit pounds its head against the cabin. We have no clue what it was.
And guess where it pounded its head against the cabin? It was, okay, I'm sleeping under the window. My head is inches from the window, and some gigantic animal goes, boom, 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 right next to my head, and we shoot up like,
oh my God.
What the heck?
Oh,
that was like, what?
Dude, I was immediately awake. It was like, there was nothing for it. I'd just driven for like 14 hours. It was so loud. It shook the whole place. And I stand up. Was it a bear? Was it a Sasquatch? Was it a giant raccoon? We may never know. But nonetheless, it was terrifying at 3 in the morning. And so we do that. We get up. We go out and we savage Northern Wisconsin the first day, right?
Oh, yeah.
We just kicked the butt out of it. I can do it in the South. Oh, he can only catch him in the South. Well, I catch him in Canada too. He can only catch. No, I came up there. We nailed some big mofos, is what me and the guru did while we were there.
Booyah!
Yeah. Haters gonna hate. But anyway, we go out, nail some nice ones, come back to Murder Cabin, and the power is out. So me and the guru have gone to Triggs. If you don't know what Triggs is, it's a grocery store that like has a muskie hanging in it, which is sort of cool. Mm-hmm. And we go in there and buy like a crap ton of food, like you're going to do on any trip, because we're staying out in the middle of nowhere, right? And that was by choice. We go and buy all this food, and guess what happens? The power's out for what, 14 hours when we're gone on the water?
Yeah, everything was trashed.
It smells like ass. Like, let's just come out and say it. Smells like total ass in the cabin.
That was awful.
We come up there, everything we bought is just like nasty, and it's hot as hell in the cabin. So it's not like in the fridge is like, you know, they should have shot that fridge and put it out of its misery long ago. Let's just put it that way. It was barely doing it beforehand. We actually questioned it. We were like, well, it's like 2 degrees cooler in this fridge than it is outside. Surely it'll help. Well, when the power's off, this thing does nothing. The door is, might as well, the door on this fridge might as well have been a sheet of paper. You know, it's like they got this thing from like clearance from North Korea is where this refrigerator came from.
Do you remember on like the last day we were walking outside, we could smell it from outside?
Oh. Buddy, I'll tell if for all the podcast listeners, you better be grateful you couldn't smell this cabin. I have smelled dumpsters. By the time me and Guru left, number one, neither of us, we're both like brainiac nerds, so neither of us have like any common sense. So it's like, yeah, sure, you can leave eggshells all over the counter. Forget about it. It is like the grossest cabin ever by the time we leave. Our joke was, if they didn't have roaches before we came there, they're going to have them after we leave. It is so bad. We're literally like you have no room between me and him having anywhere to sleep and the bags of clothes we've brought and our food and obviously copious amounts of Pepsi. We have no room in this place. Like, there's enough tackle to fill like 4 boats. And you know how it is when you go on a trip, you always have all your tackle. So it's like shit tons of tackle. There's like bags of clothes. When I come up there, dude, I'm terrified that it's going to get below like 60 or something. I'm going to freeze to death.
It did.
But I bring everything known to man. So this cabin is packed to the gills. Literally, how many steps could you take in there before you like ran into something, Tyler?
Probably two.
Like two. You could get
Every time we tried to go to the bathroom, you had to step over my air mattress. And you had to jump over it, man.
You had to move a rod to open the bathroom door. So anyway, we're at this. The murder cabin is just something else. And so all the food's rotten. And so basically our base of operations is the Minocqua Burger King. We were driving in.
So many days. Oh, my gosh.
You know, basically the staff at the Minocqua Burger King, we salute you. You know, they fed us. I hadn't had a Whopper in like 15 years. I understand why their drive-thru was way less busy than Culver's, though. Just going to throw that out there. You know, it's like we couldn't get into Culver's, might as well go to Burger King.
Yeah.
So we ate a lot of Burger King. And it was pretty sad.
It was pretty revolting how much Burger King we ate.
And we fed seagulls, and seagulls were trying to get in the car. And so it was a pretty sad trip. We caught a lot of fish. I ain't going to lie about that. But as far as hygiene, as far as things to eat, it was pretty grim. Basically, the Guru and I survived on a diet of Pepsis and Burger King for 7 days. There was a bar trip that I can't talk about on the podcast.
I would appreciate that.
That involved some wild back roading. That's all I'm going to say there. The old Steve Paul mobile and boat about found a tree. I'm just going to throw that out there. So that was going on. God, what else happened, Guru? Other than, we're going to save the kicker here. Other than the smells.
There was no TP in the cabin.
So we apologize. If you went to the C store in Minocqua at about 11 o'clock at night, we raided every napkin dispenser in that place. It was grim, folks. It was as if pirates had shown up in Minocqua, Wisconsin.
But the cashier at that place is like, why the heck do they have so many napkins?
Stop me. Stop me. I'm buying a Danish. I can have as many napkins as I want. That's the deal. I need this like foot and a half tall stack of napkins is what I need. Basically, the murder cabin really didn't provide anything other than a scary place to sleep.
You know? Yeah, it was pretty creepy.
I was bathing in Dawn dish detergent.
I took a shower and I was like, is that dish soap?
I forgot my towel at home. I have like this, you know, everybody's got your little travel bag. I had my toothbrush and all that stuff, but I forgot my towel, my soap. So I was in there taking pathetic showers with Dawn dish soap and drying off with a hand towel. It was sad. Okay. It was the saddest shit you've ever seen, folks. I promise you. It was pathetic. It was truly the murder cabin. Spooky sounds all night long. Just weird, weird, weird. And especially when you're out there, there's no power. It's like you stay at a place and you're like, wow, it'd be great to come back and have electricity.
How many people did we see? How many guys were wearing shirts?
None. Not a single one.
Nobody was wearing shirts at this place.
Apparently, this lodge has got like a 10% discount if you don't wear a shirt all day, I guess. I mean, this was like Redneck Riviera. I mean, like NASCAR fans everywhere. That's all I'm going to say. No offense if you like NASCAR, but NASCAR fans everywhere. You know what I'm saying? It was shirtless dudes. And I'm talking like we were getting up early. Me and the guru don't fool around. We were getting up early, hitting the water hard. And you're rolling out of there at like 5:45 in the morning and some dude's cracking his first beer. You know?
Yeah,
like, you know, you gotta, if you're going to drink all day, you got to start early. It was freaking ridiculous as far as that. It's just that place is where dreams go to die, Tyler, is what that is.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So anyway, we caught some fish. The one thing I'd say we had a kick-ass time at the Muskie Shop.
Oh, yeah. Those guys are
Jay,
awesome dudes.
Tom, Jim, the rest of you, forget you guys. But those three are cool. The rest of them, no kid. Everybody was awesome. Got to meet Al Frost, who I've always respected for a lot of years. Fred was there, Dave, you know, you name it. So we hung out there. We shot some videos. It's up on the app. It's on the Muskie Shop's YouTube. Hung out. We got to fish with Book Daddy Reno. He's like busier than a one-armed paper hanger, but we got to hang out with Booker for a bunch of hours and fool around. But a lot of fun at the Muskie Shop. I'm telling you, even if you're driving, because my thing has been this, like every year I've gone to Canada, I've tried to squeeze in a stop, you know, but if you're doing the route, if you're doing like what a lot of people do, which is going up the International Falls, it's not that big of a divergence to get over there. So if you need to gear up, you know, next year you're driving through, swing through there. It doesn't add that much on your trip as far as being able to hit the Muskie Shop if you're heading Canada. But I went, and you know, I'm a bait nut. I'm a like, and we'll get into that later, folks. There's about to be some really fun bait demos here because I'll save this story for a later date as far as how many baits are at the house right now. But, you know, it's just one of those deals of it's just like, it's musky porn. There's no other way to put it. It just is. There are so many baits. It is just like rock your world every time you walk in there.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. And everybody's so freaking nice. That's the best thing is those guys are great. They'll treat you right. It doesn't matter. You don't have to be the musky guru to be treated well at the Muskie Shop. But, you know, we had a lot of fun doing that. My God. And it's just like we hit, unbeknownst to everyone else, we went to every muskie store in the Northwoods.
Mm-hmm.
We did. And I did that for myself. Didn't buy much anywhere else, I'll tell you that much, because they don't hold a candle to like the selection. No. I'm not trying to like, here's a big old ad. I'm just telling you, like, I did it and I went for every place that I went. It was just like, why did I drive 15 minutes to come look at like 50 baits?
They also sell refrigerators.
You know. Prosthetic limbs, you know. They offer tooth extractions, unlicensed medical care. You know, mm-hmm. that was the thing. Anyway, goodness, the one thing we should talk about, though, is the fishing we did was like, man, we had a cold front. Did I not tell you before we went up there I was begging for a cold front?
Yeah, you got your wish, man. I wish you didn't.
But
I wish you didn't wish for that.
We kicked their butts, though.
Yeah, we did. We kicked some butt.
I'll tell you, folks, if you're a Northwoods listener or anything you're thinking about, what we did, and Guru, you can attest, there's secrets to keep here on this end of things. We got so in the slop, it was ridiculous.
We were in a foot of water.
Yep.
Sometimes 2 feet of water. That was it. Like, that was it. Nothing deeper.
No.
And we were casting and literally the thickest stuff you could find, lily pads,
mm-hmm.
just thick lily pads of slot masters. And
that was all you could throw.
That's all you could throw. And guess where all the fish were?
Right up in that shit.
Right up in the slop. Yeah. Yeah, they were right up there, man, and we crushed them.
We crushed them. That was the thing. It's like, you know, that debate's gone on for a long time of like, where do they go in a cold front? In the summer, and I've said this, and it doesn't matter where you're at. We prove where you're at. We sort of proved that on this trip is like when it gets cold fronting, they'll jam up in the thickest stuff, and you'll spend a lot of hours out there searching the basin. Or, you know, I've always felt in a summer cold front, your highest potential is as sloppy as you can get, and we did it. I mean, the biggest thing about the fishing we did was just like frustration of fouling the baits and fouling the blades. I mean, that
sucks. Basically every cast you got stuff on it.
But
you caught fish.
You caught fish. The cool thing, which was awesome about that trip, is we did, and it's such a rare beast, is we did have a true Wisconsin giant we were working.
Yeah, we were working a Mondo Hondo.
Didn't get it. Biggest of our week was 47. Not too shabby for the Northwoods, mm-hmm. I might add. That's thank you good. Very much. I put in some work, if you know what I mean. But we did. And it was, Tyler, I would say the boat was in three when we moved that fish.
Yeah.
It came in.
And we watched other musket anglers work the weed edge in like 6 feet from, and they were in 6 feet of water working the weed edge. And we were way in tight and moved a monster.
Yeah,
and we moved, they would have never had a shot at.
We caught scuds of fish that week, though.
Yeah.
I mean, and it was just like, there were numerous, like that sub 35, those Dinkersteins were just sort of pulling off on. Cause I personally don't feel like, hey, I need to catch those fish and hurt them. I always felt
And
like all the dinks were up there. But the thing was like, we were playing with the dinks at first. Went, are the big ones going to be home? And we had a 50 plus come in, mm-hmm. and it was just, oh, man, that would have been a story because that thing was so close. It bit the rubber trailer on a slop master. I was running so single close. Hook and came in on the eight, and it goes bop, and it's holding onto the rubber. I had a, I can't remember, was it Zoom or something? I run these paddle tail frog thingies just because they look stupid on the slop masters, and it had a hold of it. And Tyler sent me watching, going, well, it's going to open its mouth, or it's just going to, can we net it while it holds on to this? You know, it's holding on to like 3/4 inch of piece of rubber, and you're like, But man, it was cool though. So just a tip, everybody's always looking for advantage. That next big cold front you get up north, man, get in the slop. It was
get sloppy with it, man.
Well, Tyler, though, what was shocking is if you looked at, and I know one of the questions I was like importing the questions for the podcast for the Q&A, and you know, people always want to go about cold fronts. We saw what, an 11-degree temperature drop.
Mm-hmm.
We saw 11 degree surface temperature drop, but when we got back in the crap, in the sloppiest, you know, here I am on the Delta, 1969. There we were, Slop Master Delta, surrounded. Back in the thickest of stuff, the temperature was way higher. You know, you're just talking inches of water. Obviously, the
factual matter is the vegetation will hold higher water temps.
And so, you know, here's this vegetation. It's keeping things warm. Obviously, it's shallow water. You know, some of these fish are going to go to the deeper edge, but I've always felt the higher percentages is just burying in the slop where nobody can get to them. And we were catching northerns, we were catching big largemouth, and we were catching big muskies. And it was pretty cool as far as that. And but the piece resistance, Tyler, is this. So as you guys know, if you haven't listened to the podcast before, obviously you have, I guess. I don't know who's listening. I know there's a shit ton of you that listen, which is insane. Which is actually cool. Actually, you know what? I'm going to back it up. I'm going to tell that story up and just say this.
Okay.
I've got to get mad props. There's a dude at the muskie shop. There's a dude at Fleet Farm. There was a guy at the freaking grocery store. So many people stopped me and the guru just in Minocqua and running around in the North Woods and told us they love the podcast and love the app. That was phenomenal. I know there's tons of you guys out there and we really appreciate that support. I mean, we were standing there with Jay at the muskie shop and someone goes like, you could recognize that accent from anywhere. You know, there's
that was cool, guys.
And we love it. We were actually talking to the dude, Butch, a little update, dude update. Dude update. Anyway, so the dude update is this. The dude will be rejoining the broadcast next week. He has been super busy trying to get film for his YouTube series, is what's been going on with the dude Areno. If you don't know, he's a school teacher, and he's had, about 6 weeks, Tyler, to film for all the next year kind of deal.
Yeah.
It's been tough, so it's just like he's been running ragged. So it will be me, the dude, and the guru back to old school here in a minute. So the dude will be back. That was your dude update. Dude update. Anyway, he will be back next week. So he appreciates it, but we talked about a bunch. It was freaking crazy how many Muskie 360 guys we ran into up there, which we appreciate the hell of it. It's so cool. When we were at the Muskie shop with Book Daddy himself, we were talking about it, which, God, another man, another recap. Let's just go there, Tyler. The freaking little girl at the muskie shop.
Yeah. I've never seen that before.
So anyway, here's the deal. And I hope we're not boring you all with crazy, stupid stories, but it's a heck of a week. Anyway, we're standing at the muskie shop. Booker's there. You know, Booker's doing what Booker does. People are taking pictures with him and all this stuff. You know, they need a cardboard cutout of him at the shop and it'd be easier on him. And we're talking, and this mom comes up. She's got three little kids. What would you guess, Tyler? 70-ish, 80-ish? Was about as old as the kids were?
Yeah.
So anyway, they're saying their little girl had been bit by a muskie. And everybody's in the shop sort of like, okay. They show us her foot. She had been lit up.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was a legit.
Yeah, legit
jaw
bite.
Radius. It was a legit muskie bite. I've never believed in a muskie bite.
That was legit. Legit. 100%. I think Jay at the muskie shop took a picture, but I mean, it was either a heck of a northern or a muskie. There's no doubt about it. There's no question.
I think the mother told us that the little girl had a flashy anklet on.
Yeah,
she was real small. She has a small foot, so it's the size of a 6-inch perch. And she's got a flashy anklet on, and she's hanging her foot off like a raft or something.
She was on a little wakeboard, is what it was.
Yeah,
and freaking got lit up. I had a bunch of stitches in her foot. You could just tell, you know, from the teeth pattern. You know, I mean, it was just like, that's a muskie bite. It was crazy. It was, you know, it's sort of neat that we got to see it. Feel bad for her. She was loving it. However, if you're worried about the little girl, she was loving all the attention she was getting at the store because everybody stopped and everybody's like, wow. You know, it was a legit bite, which was crazy. You hear about that, but you could just tell. And I can't imagine what Booker and I were talking about and the guys at the muskie shop were talking about. Was imagine how freaked out that mom was, because here's this something pulling her off this wakeboard. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It was crazy, man. So, let me crack. I'm cracking a Pepsi. How many Pepsis are you in here, Guru?
I'm 50 deep.
That's a normal Wisconsin Tuesday.
It's just, you know, whatever. It's just, I'm drinking light today.
Drinking
taking
light.
Taking it easy.
You know, yeah, but anyway, I had to crack one there. I started early, unfortunately. I'm back to my crazy God schedule like day after tomorrow, so I'm getting them in while I can. Anyway, so as you guys know, I have fished all of Ohio, all of West Virginia, all of Kentucky, all of Tennessee, everywhere in the South, right? And the guru's been down here. Everybody's been down here and fished with me. There are snakes everywhere down here, period. I'm terrified of snakes. I absolutely hate snakes. Never once have I had an incident with a snake. You know, you see them swimming. Don't start laughing yet. You see them swimming around, and it ain't no thing. You know, I avoid them. I'm not going out all the way. You know, on occasion, I'll have to bust out my pea shooter I carry around and crack one's ass at the boat ramp or something. But so be it. But anyway, I've always had like this deep-seated fear that I'm going to get to. So anyway, it's what, last day of the trip?
Mm-hmm.
So I go out, me and Guru, we go to the Minocqua Burger King. That's how the day starts. Of course, that's how every day started this trip, is at the freaking Burger King. So we eat our, I hadn't had a Whopper in 15 years, and it'll be 15 more before I have another one.
It got to a point where I had eaten so many Whoppers that I can't even look at a Whopper now. Like, remember the last couple of days I started getting chicken?
Tyler, I'm just going to tell you flat out, man. My stomach is still not okay. It's just like, it was a beaver dam, and then it broke loose. I'm just going to leave it at that. So anyway.
I bet you like the cod sandwich, though.
Oh, the try the cod, he says. So, uh-huh. But anyway, we go to the Minocqua Burger King, and then we go and hit a body of water. I'm casting. Guru's in the front of the boat, and I'm throwing a Grape Flame 500 Booker tail. And I'm spinning this thing around, make some casts. We're back in the slop, and we're sort of on a deeper little break, enough that, you know, I can get that big old 9.6 pretty deep. I come in, do a figure eight, and it's sort of slow rolling. I pull the bait out, and I never in a million years figured it was going to be in Wisconsin. It was going to be in Tennessee. It was going to be in West Virginia. It was going to be one of these snaky-ass places. But no, it is the Northwoods of Wisconsin when a snake decides it's going to jump out of the water behind a musky bait. It is a 3-foot-long banded water snake decides it's coming into the boat. Now, mind you, where I'm at, I got copperheads. I got all kinds of dangerous shit floating around out here that can get you. I'm not thinking there's no venomous snakes up here and like it's like freaking Ireland. This thing comes launching into the boat. Am I lying, Tyler?
Nope. I watched it happen.
This thing launches at me into the boat. My freaking initial reaction is I scream and I take one jump backwards. Fortunately, I'm standing on top of a tackle box that slides under my feet, and I do a cartwheel out the other side of the guru's boat. Yep. I end up in the water. Now, not only is this snake still in the water, now I'm in the water. And the snake's right beside me, and I am screaming bloody murder.
Oh, my God.
I have
so
never
funny.
In my life. My phone goes out of my pocket. If you can find my cell phone, I'll pay. So anyway, I lose my cell phone. This is all payback. Everybody that listens to the podcast, you know this is all payback because of how hard we laughed at those guys that fell out of my boat. I have never fallen out of the boat. You know, freaking, we're talking 25 years hard on the water or however long it's been. Never once. This snake jumps out and scared the shit out of me. There's nothing for it. It scared me because it was so tannic you couldn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
So Jason might have jumped out of the water. You never would have saw this thing coming. and it was just mouth open coming in. Its freaking head landed over the side of the boat. Tyler, how big of a splash did I make? It was instantaneous, wasn't it?
It was instantaneous. It was like taking, if I jumped off and did a cannonball, that's the biggest splash he made.
Yeah, so.
I was dying, like, get me out of this water!
Oh, my.
I was crying while lifting you out of the water.
I was losing it. And so, Tyler, as soon as I hit the water, and I'm coming for the gunwale of that boat. And Tyler grabs me up under the arms, and I roll myself in, kicking at the snake, mind you, the entire time. This thing was pissed off or something. And here I am, hate snakes, and I'm kicking at a freaking snake in the water. I've lost my phone, and I just look at Tyler, and I said, that sort of took the sport out of it, didn't it? So, now, I don't give a rat's ass. I am not. I have no shame, Tyler. You know this. I have no shame. So I'm not embarrassed or anything. I don't care. Make Tyler drive me to the Minocqua Verizon store, and I'm standing there, and a guy looks at me and says, "Sir, you're sort of making a puddle." It didn't take us long to make it to the store, and I'm still soaking wet from head to toe, standing there trying to buy a new iPhone 11. And I opened my wallet to freaking pay for this thing, and water fell out. So, it was ridiculous.
It was a good day.
It was a good day. Went back and kicked some ass, though. Put some more fish.
We went back, and like 10 minutes later, we caught some fish.
I don't care. It was funny. Man, I'll tell you, I died when I called Booker and Tony. And the fact is, of anything that we didn't have a camera rolling on,
I know.
Listen, folks, I did basically a cartwheel out the other side of the boat.
It was slow motion, and it was spectacular to watch. I am very glad that I was there.
It was pretty epic. I didn't know it was possible for me to do that, but by God, I did it, and it was in an instant. So I went for a little swim on the Guru's boat. That is the recap of our Wisconsin murder cabin trip. We're going to jump right into questions. Nicholas says, hey, what is the best lake for a first muskie? Well, here's the problem. Where are you at?
Mm-hmm.
That's the big thing. If you're up north, there's plenty of little action lakes. Tyler was showing me Wisconsin DNR. Explain to Nicholas, if he's up north, sort of like the breakdown of those DNR lakes, Tyler.
Go on the DNR website. There's like muskie class lakes that they list by county. And there's A1, A2, there's B and C. A1 is trophy class water, super low density. That is not a good place to go. The A2 is high population density, action packed. Okay. It's not necessarily trophy class. It can be, but their population is high, so the chances of contacting an active muskie are exponentially higher than A1. And you can go on there, go to the county that you're in, and go, oh, this lake's A2. This lake's A2. I'm going to go to that one. And I would suggest an A2 lake that is small,
mm-hmm.
easy to break down. Don't pick like a 1,000-acre A2 no. lake. That's going to take forever. Go to like 100 to 300 acre A2 lake, nothing over that, and your chances of contacting an active muskie are very high,
way higher. And the thing is this, Nicholas, if you're not in Wisconsin, you're in another area, check for the heaviest stocking. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be, you know, if you're starting out, go easy, get one in the net. You know, I've always said, I don't care if it's 30 inches or 80 inches, it's a muskie. Don't care.
Yeah.
You know, get on some action water, research your DNR, whatever state you are in. Jacob says, how do you guys choose what type of leader to use? Mm. Also from the, here we go, Tyler. You got fans in low places here. He says,
oh, really?
What type of leader? Obviously, you guys know I don't pre-read these. This is funny. He said, what do you guys choose? What type of leader to use? Okay. He says, also for the guru, I've seen on Instagram, you've been trolling bucktails. How do you determine what speed and depth should you be running them at? Love the podcast. Have a Pepsi for me. All right, guru. Oh, the guru's right. Been trolling bucktails, eh?
I'm trolling the bucktails.
Guru invented that, didn't you, eh?
Nay. Boop Daddy showed me that trick. So what I've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
I've been trolling bucktails and spinnerbaits.
I could tell that from the question when he said you've been trolling them.
Yeah. So what I'm doing is on a weed edge. I am trolling bucktails and spinnerbaits. With spinnerbaits, I like to troll just fast enough where the spinnerbait is about to blow out of the water, but it doesn't.
Yep.
And I troll it at that speed. And you do some S-turns, go in, speed up, slow down by turning left or right.
Mm-hmm.
And I stay right on the weed edge. Sometimes if you troll a spinnerbait, you can go right into that slop.
Yeah.
And troll it right through it. And be virtually weedless. Sometimes you get some weeds, but whatever. I like trolling bucktails strictly on the weed edge. If I have two people in the boat, which I usually have my dad with me, I'll have a slop master on the inside going through the slop, and I'll have a bucktail on the outside weed edge where there's no weeds to hit, follow up the bucktail. And that's how I've been catching fish as of late.
Yeah, and the one thing I would say is, like, when we were out with Joe, he smacked a hog doing that.
Yeah, Booker was weird. Yeah, he got a big one.
And the thing is what you were saying about, like, when you've been trolling, like, in the evenings with your dad and stuff, is depending on where you're at, will limit how many lines you have. I think in Wisconsin, it's county by county is what we found. Some states are different. Make sure, dependent wherever you're at, look it up what your trolling regs are. But I really like what Joe was doing with the combo of twin blade and slop masters. So, you know, put the safety spin spinnerbait on the sloppy side of things and run the double blade on the clearer side of things.
Yep.
And the thing is this, his timing on this question is awesome, because me and you were out on the boat with Joe. We were trolling. I literally almost said the name of the lake and I would get murdered if I didn't. But we were trolling a lake. And we kept having one spinnerbait blow out. It just wouldn't run. He's caught bait fish on this. You got to sort of play with your spinnerbait. Some of them troll well, some of them don't. It just is what it is, depending on a litany of factors. And just find a couple of those that troll really well. What we're doing as far as length, and the guru's doing and Joe's doing, everybody's doing with these things is you let out as much line as it takes to get that thing down, so it's not blowing out, meaning you're not seeing the bait breach the surface. And also, too, I wouldn't say we're bulging these things either, though.
No, not at all.
You know, so it's a matter of, like, what, get it 6 inches subsurface to a foot subsurface, whatever amount of line that takes. You know, there's not it, like with blade baits, there's really not a definitive answer. It depends on how the bait runs, how big the blade is, how much lift it has. What would you say? I mean, Joe ain't listening. What would you say his trolling speed was the other day? Like 3.2?
3.2 to 3.6.
That's sort of the hot spot. If you really want some, like, you want the bad daddy advice, that is the blade speed that we kick ass with. 3.2, 3.6, somewhere in that neighborhood. Let enough line to go out where that you can't see that thing popping out behind the boat. The other thing, guru, he said, but how do you choose what type of leader you use? I use the same damn leader for everything.
I am a piano wire guy.
Yeah.
I run two leaders, okay?
You're a pianist? I'm a penis wire. I like penis wire.
Killing me.
The
straight piano wire, which is the straight wire. You know what I'm talking about, Steve. You use the same.
That's what I use.
Same
yeah.
wire. Yeah, I use that for my bucktails. Use that for my crankbaits. All that stuff. For finesse stuff, I have very soft, like 9-strand kind of like Tiger Wire leader that's a little bit soft from twitching, and just to get a little bit more action out of it. I don't use fluorocarbon for casting at all. I use fluorocarbon for trolling leaders, just because I don't feel like switching to a switching for, between wire and fluorocarbon when I switch between stained and clear water lakes.
Yeah. I find that the straight wire is just the most versatile for me, because I can smack a Phantom on, I can smack a Glide Raider on, I can smack any bait on there. I use wire leader with my Twitch baits too. I mean,
I always felt that it might give off a different vibration if you use straight wire.
Well,
you know what I'm talking about?
It's probably more. God, you could delve into it as far as it, like the wire might reverberate to some extent like a reverb spring, but
yeah,
if that's what it takes to catch a fish, just leave me out. You know, I don't think it matters too much, but I know what you're saying. I know there's different vibrations created by each leader. I just try to not overthink it, you know, and it's just like I roll with one. What I fish exactly is a 14-inch piano wire leader. That's why I always fish. You might catch me with the multi-strand if I'm really on a twitch bait pattern, because that does allow some different angles of float up when you're twitching a bait. But I'll tell you, we get the leader question on here all the time. It's something that always comes up. The biggest thing I would say is fish what you're confident in. Like, it's just, you know, if you're worried about durability and stuff, I think the strongest leader in the game is a straight wire leader.
Absolutely.
I don't think any leader is stronger than straight wire. It's hanging on the wall. I fish AFW Toothproof, and I fish the Booker leaders. They're strong as you can get. You know, like me and you both, though, I use hard mono for trolling leaders. I use 130-pound hard mono.
Yep.
You know.
It works.
It works. It's way cheap. So, you know, but as far as that, if like I had to gun to my head, I got to pick one leader, it's going to be that 14-inch wire, because I can do the most with it. Anyway, next up, Kylie. Hey, guys, love the podcast. You get me through some slow days at work. Awesome. He said, I've become a giant fan of Suix. Now that I finally figured out how to work them, tune them, and properly. He said, I'm running into a wall boat side. What do you do with your Suix boat side? Am I missing something? Okay. Tyler?
Mm-hmm.
Of anything that I can fish with, gliders and Suix, baby. I'll tell you, it's the biggest fish that I've ever seen hit the gunwale of the boat was on a Suix. And I got about a billion of them hanging up here by me. I love them. Here's the thing. Suix are a tricky bait boat side. Obviously. That's why you're writing in. The thing that I have had the most action out of is working them zigzag beside the boat if a fish is behind them. You're actually using the rod and using the leader and try to create that thing, make it zigzag a bit. I've also seen guys doing like this side-to-side smack with the rod tip to get attention from the fish. I've not had that work for me. What I'm doing is when I'm doing the last rip by the boat, I'm trying to keep that bait down, and I'm trying to make it have a zigzag action subsurface. And you got to use the rod tip to do it. I've had a lot of fish just go ripping at that thing right there. As far as anything else, I mean, that's like me and you've talked about, like dead sticking and gliders and all this different stuff. You know, what happens with glide baits, what happens with Suix, what happens with some bait classes, by the time we're beside the boat, you're just out of options. The other thing I've done well with Suix is, and I'm talking both of these with the zigzag and with everything, rod tips in the water. And you've seen me do this, Tyler, and catch fish with it, where that rod tip's buried and that bait's behind it, and I'm walking the fish around the boat. You know, and just jerking the bait as best as you can. Suix a tricky bait. That would be my guess, is just walking around the boat. Taking past the front of the trolling motor. I don't know why that works so often, but it works for me all the damn time, is walking them around the boat with a Suix rod tip down. You know, if the fish is coming in at 4 feet down, I'm going to have the damn bait down there, you know, and if the rod's down there, you can really do some stuff. The rod's creating a ruckus. The bait's down there. Work it around, jerk it around. and that's the best I got, sort of zigzagged. If you can imagine what a glider looks like subsurface, that's what I'm trying to do with my Suix boat sign. Like I said, there's some guys that do some other stuff. That's what works for me. Next up is John. John says, I started musky fishing a couple years back on the Manitowish water area. I was given the advice to take small bucktails and just pound weed beds and rock bars during low light periods and moon phases. It's been good advice, and I've scored multiple fish. My best is a 48-incher. That's a great fish. He said I caught it right before a thunderstorm. As I advance and I want to become more consistent under my current approach, I'll have a hot weekend and then get cold for a month. I'm looking for advice to transition from being a beginner and move into the intermediate level. I want to work on fishing more consistently. What tips for moving fish and catching muskies more on a more consistent basis do you have for someone during this musky journey? So John started out, he did what actually me and you, Guru, we told a guy a few weeks ago that couldn't catch a fish.
Mm-hmm.
Go pound the rocks, pound the weeds, throw a buck till you catch a muskie.
Yep.
I mean, there ain't nothing for it, you know, if we're talking ground zero. So we got a guy that's past that. He's caught some fish. He's got a 48-incher. That's a heck of a fish.
You know, I would say,
yeah,
I would say the next step after bucktails, and I would put prop style topwater in the same category as bucktails.
Right.
It's just straight retrieve.
Right.
You can bulge it and pulse it, whatever.
Yep.
The next step is mastering crankbaits.
Yes.
That is the next step.
That is.
Because crankbaits will catch fish when bucktails won't.
But that opens up a lot of doors.
Yep.
Because of anything that is just factual, you've been to my house, what sits right on my coffee table?
Crankbait secret, the Bible.
The Bible. And that's not a joke. I mean, Joe will tell you, you know, and we're going to work on having a digital version of that on the app here pretty soon, folks, once all this COVID bullshit's done. But, you know, we're just logistical problems on the guy that's digitizing that. But anyway, you know, Joe sort of took that book, and that's a culmination of a lot of great fishermen that influenced Joe. But, you know, what separates the men from the boys in musky fishing is crankbaits, period. Full stop, period. Rubber doesn't, topwater's nothing, diving rise, gliders, all that stuff. If you can fish crankbaits, and I don't mean you can throw it out and reel it in, you understand when, where, how, what to do with a crankbait, what depth to run it is, that's the real deal stuff. So I can't agree with you anymore that getting into crankbaits, understanding how they work, when to apply them, when do I fish deep, when do I fish shallow, what can I do to add triggering properties to a crankbait is going to be a game changer. I would say this, though, that's probably the weakest point of most people's game.
Well, everyone likes to fish bucktails.
Yep.
Everyone likes to fish prop-style topwater baits. Everyone likes to rip rubber.
Yeah.
The three easiest musky baits to use.
Yep. And it's just like...
It's either you reel it straight in or you rip it. That's it.
What about Tyler? What about that dude? We sell ripping rubber.
This dude.
Oh, my God.
He blasted past us at the speed of light.
5 trillion miles an hour.
And then he pulls up right behind us.
Yep.
Stands in the middle of his boat, not on the edge. A cast and a half off. He's standing in the middle of his boat. He's not even on his front deck or on his back deck.
Yeah.
He's in the cockpit in the center.
Right by
the seat.
He puts
on a pounder bulldog.
Yeah.
And starts ripping it for the next 2 hours. From the middle of the boat.
Behind us. Follows us around the lake, ripping a pounder as fast as humanly possible in a cold
front.
From
the middle of the boat with no figure eights. And we're like,
what is, if you got some more in the boat, we'll smoke some too.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, I love rubber. I'm a bulldog Medusa aficionado. But man, I'll tell you, that was that just summed it up, because it's like no boat control, none. Mm-hmm. Like this guy's like literally, we're like, and I don't care what people do on the water, but man, me and you were like, what on God's green earth is going on? This guy's back there doing like donuts behind us, essentially, because the boats just turn around. He had like a gigantic Minn Kota remote around his neck. I don't know why he wasn't on the front deck. There was no waves. So what? I've never. I mean, did that half the time that bulldog didn't even get wet? He was ripping it so fast.
He's trying to catch him in the air.
I mean, he was just waiting for one to jump out of the lake and grab that thing, because he might as well be fishing with a damn bird. Mm-hmm. That's what he was doing. It was get you a pigeon on there and just let that thing fly around. He was fishing for Montezuma's revenge is what he was. It was that son of a bitch. He didn't want a 38. He wanted a 65 is what he was fishing for. It's funny.
Wisconsin 65.
I want that North Wisconsin 65. I'm going to get him. Watch out, boys. I'm coming for you. Anyway, yes, John, our recommendation is rip rubber as fast as you can at all times, regardless of season. Anyway, next
up rip it so hard that it doesn't even get in the water.
Dude, that
so
was
so fast that it, like, don't even put it in the water. Just
anybody
so
that's
fast.
All the listeners, you've been out there. You've seen that guy. Me and Tyler were hee-hawing. You've seen the guy that's just like, conditions be damned. It's time for a mag dog. It was awesome. Me and you were fishing like really downsized cranks, really downsized gliders, catching fish. This guy's like seven casts off. I mean, he was fishing different water than us. I'll tell you that much.
Mm-hmm.
I think that guy was fishing a different planet than us. Next question up is from Austin. He says, oh, he loves the podcast. He appreciated we gave some advice on figure eights and another question that helped his ass. He said, I find myself laughing at the podcast during work. Oh, man. You're going to get in trouble listening to idiots at work. He says, I live in southern Wisconsin, and August is coming around. And he says, it's going to start getting a little colder, especially the end of August. He says, my question is, what do you guys consider to be a cold front? Should I change my tactics for anything that feels like a temperature drop? He said, but do you guys start thinking a cold front at 10 degrees or is it a 15-degree drop? What sort of things are you looking for, and how do you determine if it's a true cold front? Really, the deal is this. A cold front is when we actually have a weather shift. You know, you can have a day that's hotter, a day that's cooler, you know, air temperature, but when you have those serious, like, post-frontal, meaning a storm front has cold come through, which pushes the warm out, and then you have the cold air behind a storm front. That's cold front. I don't really worry about cold fronts until they're affecting surface temperature. You know, they're always going to have an effect on demeanor. They're always going to have effect on to some degree fish location. But, you know, I don't think there's like a mark like where I go, oh, the air temp dropped 10 degrees. This is what matters.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think there's a great gauge, because I've had some of that. Me and you, dude, look at that cold front. What we did on that one trip.
Yeah.
We thumped skulls, and I caught one of the biggest fish I've ever caught in my life on a trip with a guru, and as a cold front, but it was so quick, and it went away in a day and a half that it barely affected water temperature. It
yeah.
did, but not enough where they went, I'm going to shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to gauge. It's case by case. There's not, I don't think, you know, if there was a definitive, like, thought process on that, there had been a billion articles written about it already. Like, XX, you know, X and Y, you should do this. So, you got to gauge it. You know, if the cold fronts that scare me, and when I get spooked out, when the birds aren't chirping, when nothing's moving, there's no bugs.
We had that. We had that on our trip one day. Yeah.
One day when the mosquitoes, you're sitting there and you're like, you got so much freaking bug spray on yourself. Me and you were fishing like Mosquito Lake too. That was the other problem. There, you know, many a nights we had the 10-minute warning where you heard the trees buzz and it's like, bzz, 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 you know, and you know the mosquitoes are coming. One day during a cold front, there was nothing.
It was dead zone.
Dead zone. And me and you, the fishing was a dead zone that day.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can sort of take your cues. Don't take your cues from the number. Take your cues from the environment and go, are the birds moving around? you know, are edge animals, deer, stuff like that. Is anything happening with them? Are the bugs still moving around? If it's minor and it doesn't have a lot of influence, you're going to still see animal activity. When it's a bad cold front, there ain't nothing moving. Everybody's shut down. That's the best gauge. I don't have a definitive gauge for, like, do this based on those. Do you have any input on that, Guru, as far
as... What? Kind of add to what you said, Bucher always says, take your eyes off your units and your technology and look up.
Stop playing with your unit, boy.
He says, stop looking at your electronics, mm-hmm. stop looking at your technology, and use your instincts and look around you.
Yeah.
Yep. And he catches a lot of fish doing that.
Yeah, just getting a gauge. That's the thing is, like, I, you know, are if you're up there, are the eagles flying around? Are they feeding? Are the heron cranes, you know, check them out. Check out the water birds. Check out the bug hatches. That'll give you a good feel for how bad of a cold front it is and if you need to make major changes. I mean, if it's shut down and it's just like trash, you'll know. You'll know quickly. Next up is Dan. He said, what? Oh, my God. Sorry, I'm laughing, Dan. What lakes in northern Wisconsin is... Oh, man, I can't even get it out, Tyler. I've had too many Pepsis, and this is a great question. Let's see how much trouble we can get in. What lakes in northern Wisconsin does Joe Bucher fish?
Ah!
Oh! No, let's just give that out on the podcast.
Everybody, he fishes here!
Big Kitten... Trout
Lake.
Trout
is,
Lake. That's the only lake he fishes.
Is his favorite lake.
That's all he fishes.
I get so bored while we're filming because it's always on trout.
It's always
we drive like 2 hours to get there, and it's always
trout. And he goes out in the middle. In the middle of trout. Dan, I appreciate your question. We can't tell you that because me and the Guru would be beaten to death. That's what would happen.
You'll never hear from us ever again. We'll disappear.
Yeah, we would be in Trout Lake at the bottom. Can't give you up those morsels of where he's fishing. You can always look for the recon. Saw the hat, saw the recon, had to pull over is what a guy said to us or said on Lake of the Woods one time. He saw Bucher out there fishing. You know, there's a lot of lakes he fishes, though. That's the one thing is, like, he doesn't just fish one or two.
No, he's moving.
And the thing is this is, like, a lot of the lakes everybody else fishes. He just does it when it's right. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, like, you'll be in a lake and a guy be like, I've never seen you here. And you're sitting here going, well, we've never seen you here because you happen to show up on the right day. So can't give that up. There's a lot of lakes he fishes. He's up in that Northwoods area. And he keeps his tires hot. He ain't just sitting around fishing the same two lakes. So anyway, moving on. Austin says, thank you guys. Oh, man, that's why I already read that one. I'm stupid. Me dumb. Okay, here's a really long question. Here it comes. Hunter says, hey, I just started listening to the podcast last week, and I can say that I have already listened to about 3/4 of the episodes. Thank you. He says it's amazing and anything. He said there's nothing. He said there's nothing else out here like this. No joke, because we're idiots. That's why it's like that. I'm trying to get to the main question. I'm sorry. He said, thank you, guys. He says he's in his early 20s, and he's from central Wisconsin. He says, I primarily fish in the Phillips area, but travel around as many lakes as I can. My question for you guys is what led you to start guiding? I'm currently an electrical apprentice, and I like my job, but I don't love my job. What was your guys to push and start guiding and fishing for muskies as a living?
Mm.
He says, is it worth trying to become a guide? He said, there's just so many guys that tried to do this, and, you know, everybody and their brother's trying to do what you guys do. I'm trying to skim this. He said, what skills do I need to figure out? And how do I put a lot more fish under my belt before I try to do something like this? Oh, man. I'm scanning this. He says, you know, what other skills besides fishing does a guy need to be successful?
People skills.
I stood in the muskie shop and the conversation I had with Al Frost. Frosty is a awesome guide. He's a legend up there. And me and him talked about the Dog and Pony Show. And, you know, here it is. I come on. If you want to get down to brass tacks, you know, once a week we come on here and do probably about an hour-long podcast most week, just bullshitting to nothing. You need people skills, right? And you need to know what the heck you're doing on the boat. And so we were just talking about cold fronts, and you need to know how to minimally know how to move a muskie under any circumstance possible. You're not going to do it every time. It's not going to happen every time, right? I tell my clients, I said, we're going to get one or two chances. They're going to be trophy class fish, but regardless of what's going on, we're going to get some chances. Does that happen every time? No, right? It's muskie fishing. I'm not going to sit here and lie and say, well, every damn day I go out there, boys. But the majority of the time it does, you know, you gotta be confident that, you know, if somehow you're magically setting it freaking, you're eating at Ponderosa with old ladies and somehow you're magically transported to your boat, you better be able to catch a muskie right then and there. You know, and that's the trick, is like, you got to know what you're doing. And the thing is this, guru, and I'm not trying to self-aggrandize or anything, like, me and you fished new water that nobody in our group had really fished before, and we pretty much hit the water and within 15 minutes we're on the fish on brand new water.
Yep.
Right? How many times did we do it on how many different lakes? How many times did we go out on a body of water and said, I'll show you where the bait schools are?
Uh-huh.
Like, we go on a Cisco-style chain of water with, like, clear water, open water, where there'd be pelagic bait fish, and I could look at the map and go, there will be suspended bait fish off this point because the wind's coming this direction, the landmass is this way, the structure is this way, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 components into one. I go, the fish will be here. How many times did I do it, guru?
Countless.
Okay. That is from buku years of doing it. So, like, that's skills and patterning. You need to be a guide. God, I'm just trying to think because it's such a great question. I get it. I mean, the hardest part of this whole thing is you got to do the impossible every day. You know, you've got to, you can't have a lot of days where nothing happens. You can't have a day where you don't find a ranger. So the biggest tip I give to anybody that's thinking about being a muskie guide is this. You've got to understand all of the forage in your area. I'm not saying in one lake. I'm saying, like, what is the forage doing throughout the course of the year? How do the muskies respond to those movements that the forage make? What is their predatory stance that they're looking at? And how do I engage them? That's it. If you understand that and you can consistently do that, you could do it. Like you said, the people skills are huge. You know, God, I like this question because it's just a different state of mind. But, you know, the thing is this, is most musky trips is 10 hours of fishing for 10 seconds of excitement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to keep them engaged. Me and Frost were talking about that, about open water fishing. I'll just tell you flat, there's no secrets here. And Al Frost, being an amazing musky angler and an amazing musky guide, we were talking about casting for pelagic open water fish. And he said, half the time I'm having to position the boat in such a way that people think they're throwing at something, because you got to keep them believing in the program. You know, and so you got to be able to hook your client and keep him engaged and keep him believing in what you're doing until you can be successful. That's it. So that's the big component a lot of people don't think about. The other thing about being a muskie guide is this, it is tremendously long days. And so you got to spend a lot of time on the water. You got to be pretty much live it, breathe it, eat it, sleep it. There's no off days. There's no health insurance. There's no company benefits. There's no Christmas party, and there's no Christmas bonus. So that would be the things that a lot of people don't think about. I'm not going to hang on this thing forever. But those are all interesting questions. Like, what I would say is you've got to be consistently catching fish, and you got to consistently always know where they're at and know why they're there and what they're doing. And he said, what can you do to sort of kick his game into the high gear? Master every bait there is. Master every page. Sorry. I'm laughing. Yes. Yeah, sorry. There's a joke in that. You got to understand every bait that there is, every bait class, what they do, how they work, why they work, how they trigger actions. So that's like before you even step out the door and say, hey, I'm going to do this, you got to know how to catch a fish on everything there is. You know, not just top raiders. You got to know how to catch a fish on every walk the dog bait. You got to know how to catch a fish on every style of bait there is. And I'm not talking one fish. I'm talking catch a 50 or 60. On each bait class to go, okay, cool. Now I understand how they hit these things, why they hit them, and be able to convey to somebody how to work these baits. That's the other thing, Tyler. Me and you talk about that a lot of times. It's like, you know, how do you convey to somebody? We talk about, like, on the podcast when we're sort of looking back, like, how can we help explain verbally to people on what to do? You know, communication skill is huge. Anyway, I love that question. I could wax eloquent on this forever, but I will move on to John. John says, I have a 5-year-old son who obviously is fascinated with musky lures. That's awesome. He says, what is the youngest person you have ever guided? He said, in the next few years, I would like to be shopping for a musky rod for him. What do you recommend as a first musky rod for a kid? What length action? He said, what small lures could we get a kid hooked on musky fishing with early? You know, he said, I didn't get into musky fishing until I was an adult, so anything for children is new to me. Youngest person I've ever got was 8 years old. I've got a client that's got a kid that if this kid's not on the Bassmaster tour, it's going to be a waste. My cutoff's like 12 or 13, but this one dude, he's got a kid that's just like a freak. I've shown you a picture of that kid, Tyler, where he's he's just a freak, man. But you know, you're gonna have difficulty. Here's the problem, John, with 5-year-olds and musky fishing and younger kids is you gotta, just like the guiding thing, you're gonna be guiding your son. You gotta keep him believing in the program. You better be on an action lake, you know, or it's gonna be suck fest. I remember being a little kid out on the water going, man, I hate musky fishing. This sucks because we never catch anything. You know, so I would definitely be on action lake. Let me think. I don't even, you know, like that little guy, that 8-year-old I had on the boat could throw a bait caster, which was crazy. But, you know, if I were you and I was trying to get a small kid, I would not be fishing big fish water. I would go to Dinkerstein Lake and fish for Dinkersteins on like some kid's bass tackle. You know, what do you think, Tower, for a kid? What's a 30-pound braid, maybe? What's like, that stuff's pretty dang thin.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be tough. I don't think there's like a specific rod. You just got to go to the store and find something that's like small enough that he can cast it. You know, you're not going to have him fishing at 8'6" or anything. Just, man... The only thing I'd say is just make sure it's fun, though.
That's the most important thing.
When I was a kid, it wasn't. It wasn't fun. You know, it was like, oh, here we go on musky hail ride again. Not going to catch anything. So just make it fun. Get some braided line on a small rod. As far as lures, safety pin spinner baits, little crank baits, anything that floats. That's my biggest thing when I do have young kids. Heck, when I have freaking adults on the boat that aren't great fishermen, you know, shallow raiders quickly come to mind as a great bait. Something that's easy to throw, and there's nobody on planet Earth that doesn't like throwing top water.
Make sure it floats.
Make sure it floats for a kid, and just do that, man. Just find a bass rod, and you know what? If he hooks up, hope it ain't a giant, and you'll get it into the boat.
I was little bit squeaky, little man.
Mini guru.
I was little guru. So I would, like a beefed up bass rod, like a 7-foot bass rod, that's not like real whippy, like heavy power, extra heavy. I'd say heavy. And
I would just go with that, with maybe 50-pound braid on it.
Do you remember that I told you the story about me and a friend trolling Snoopy rods one time?
No.
We did it. This is long before YouTube. This is when I was, God, I was in like late teens, maybe early 20s. 10-pound test. We had a Barbie and a Snoopy rod, right? With the Meps giant killers on them. And it was like, that's all we did one day until somebody got a muskie. It was hilarious. And my friend, we were trolling, and we're literally just flatline trolling Snoopy rods. You know, we're talking these, what are they, 2 feet long with the freaking reel built into them?
Yeah.
10-pound test. The drag's like backed off just to the point where the giant killer won't rip. And we're in an old John Boat I had, and he caught like a 32 on that thing. It was funny as hell. It was like, if you can imagine just like the end of the world, there's no way you feel like you're going to land that fish. It felt like he was fighting like a freaking tank. You know, he's holding this tiny little Snoopy rod. If I had that on video and it was the days of YouTube, you know, people like, big fish caught on Snoopy rod, you know, because everybody's turning musky fishing into like a stunt of how much dumb crap can we do, you know? Mm-hmm. I caught a muskie on a can of cream corn. Yeah. You can turn. Cream corn muskies! !! 5 exclamation points. You can, basically, though, you could put a blade in front of anything and catch a muskie on it, though.
I was thinking about getting like a sucker rig, put a blade on it, and just hook up a hot dog and just reeling in like a bucktail.
Here's my thing. Cucumber. You have to put a cucumber. No, sweet pickle, right? You have, to, you have to make a bucktail of a sweet pickle and catch something on it. You know, it'd work.
Sweet pickle muskie.
Sweet, and 3 exclamation points. Everything's in caps, right?
Mm-hmm.
The thumbnail has a muskie with a sweet pickle in its mouth. Or, hell, Salisbury steak. I don't know. Up the score. What other obtuse home goods could we catch a muskie on with a blade in front of?
A rotisserie chicken.
That'd be a big fish.
Pork chop.
Apple remote. I mean, like, who cares? If you put a set of eights in front of something, it'll eventually catch a muskie, you know? But anyway, that's your homework for the week, Tyler. You have to make a bucktail out of a pickle. That's so it. Stupid. Next time we fish together, we'll do that. We'll just, like, as a joke, it'll be like dabbing on muskies, where we just act like we're super cool. Dab, caught a muskie on a pickle. It's just a bucktail, man. You know, literally, they really don't care what's behind those blades too often. Anyway. Yeah. Moving on, folks. Next week is the return of the dude. We're going to get a big season update from the dude himself. See what dudeisms the dude has been doing during dude land.
Dude.
That's all it literally. Listen, Chaz isn't listening right now. That guy says dude way too much. Wait.
Yes, he does.
He does. It's a secret, okay? It's not a put-on. He literally says dude to everything.
Dude.
Wonder if him and his girlfriend are making out, and he's like, dude. Anyway, folks, that wraps up another Muskie 360 podcast. We'll catch you next week with the big dude update. We got some cool biologists coming out and some fun stuff coming up. Thanks for listening again, and I mean this because, like, I was so humbled on my trip up north. Thank you guys for all the support. The Muskie Shop, everybody at that store, I'm eternally grateful for how kind you are. Everybody in the North Woods, all the muskie fishermen, we're building such a cool community here of, like, cool people. Thank you. Signing off. Catch you next week.
The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in big fish products, and the Muskie Shop.